Meeting will come to order. Representative Hancock, did you have a chance to review the minutes?
I have, and I would move the minutes of April 7th, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Hancock moves the minutes of April 7th. Any comments or questions, changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. Before we get going on Representative O'Driscoll's bill, I just wanted to welcome Pat Calusa to our, did I say that right? Close enough? To our committee. He's replacing Kate Hendricks, who apparently got a better offer. I don't know how that could be, but so welcome to the committee. Representative O'Driscoll, would you like to move your bill?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'd like to move House File 1117 this morning and request its passage and move to the General Register. I think that's where we're ultimately going to put it when we're done this morning, for passage and to go to the General Register. We have before us in 1117 is a technical correction. In the state of Minnesota, the political subdivisions, such as counties, cities, and school districts, have the ability when they put deposits in financial institutions in accordance with state law to be able to use the FDIC insurance as a hedge against default or loss of taxpayer dollars. And then in those sums that are over the FDIC insured amount, the financial institution needs to post other assets or securities to safeguard public funds. What has happened, and we've discovered, is a technical issue that the state of Minnesota itself, when it puts deposits in accounts, does not have that same privilege of incorporating the FDIC insurance as a part of the calculation for protecting against loss or default public tax dollars or public funds that have been collected. And so this bill attempts to formalize and memorialize in statute that information. I have two groups of testifiers who will be here with us this morning. First, I have from the Bankers Association, who can speak to that matter, Ms. Tess Rice, and I'd ask that she come forward at this time.
Welcome to the committee. If you could just please state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Tess Rice. I'm General Counsel for the Minnesota Bankers Association and the Director of Government Relations.
Please proceed.
The MBA supports this bill because we believe it makes sense to incorporate FDIC insurance into the amount of collateral that's required for a deposit, and we also think it makes sense for the state deposits to be treated the same way as other political subdivisions.
Okay, did anybody have any questions for Ms. Rice? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And the second testifier this morning is Mr. Joe Howe from MMB. He's the Director of State Treasury. He'd like to also just address the matter before the committee shortly as well.
Great. Welcome to the committee, and again, please state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joe Howe. I'm the Director of Treasury Operations at MMB. And I'm just here basically to say that MMB fully approves this bill.
Very good. Anybody have any questions for the witness or for Representative O'Driscoll? Not even Representative Winkler?
My only question, Madam Chair, was how old the Treasury Director is.
Treasury Director does not need to answer that question.
I'll tell you off the record.
No. Okay.
I just got told this at my mom, so I'll tell you later.
Okay.
I did wonder.
Madam Chair, if there are no other questions or testimony from those here, I would move, renew my motion that 1117 be approved by the committee and move to the General Register.
Okay. Representative O'Driscoll renews his motion that House File 1117 pass and be referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. We're making good time today. Okay, Representative Sanders, are you ready for 1152?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 1152 to be passed and placed on the General Register.
Okay, Representative Sanders moves House File 1152 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register.
And then, Madam Chair, I also have an author's oral amendment that I'd like to take care of at this time.
Okay, state your amendment.
On page 2, line 13, delete the words "the pledged." On page 2, line 14, delete "goods." And then last, on page 2, line 23, after 325J.08, insert paragraphs 7 and 10.
I'm sorry, did you say delete it or just after?
After 325J.08, insert paragraphs 7 and 10.
Oh. 7 and 10.
Go ahead.
Representative Sanders, there's an A2 amendment that looks similar. That's not correct, or?
Yes, if it's in the packets. I was not aware that it was in the packets.
The A2 amendment says paragraph 7 and 8, however.
Correct. That's incorrect, and it should be 7 and 10.
Yeah. I think what we'll do then is, if it's okay, we'll just incorporate the change from A8. We'll change that to 10, incorporate that, and then we'll move the A2 amendment. Did you want to talk about why you're making that change?
Yeah, Madam Chair, absolutely. I have Paul Cassidy here that can go over some of the technical aspects.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Cassidy with Leonard Street and Dinard here on behalf of the Rixman Companies and Pawn America. The changes that Representative Sanders just went over, number one, on line 213 and 214 are just cleanup language. It's extraneous language that shouldn't have been in there in the first place. That paragraph only deals with items that people bring to a pawn shop to sell, so that the pawn shop purchases versus items that are pawned. So those words are removed for that purpose. On lines 2.23, this is language that has been requested by some of the cities. This section here would exempt the hold periods from local ordinances in terms of the standardization of the hold periods at 60 days for pawn and 30 days for purchases, and limit this to only paragraphs 7 and 10, which are on the front page of this in current law. So it's tightening up language so that it doesn't apply this entire exception to that entire section of law. And that came at the request of some of the cities, including the city of St. Louis Park.
Okay. Any questions to the A2 amendment? Seeing no questions, we'll take a vote. All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment does prevail. To your bill, Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1152 deals with a couple different things. First off, deals with statewide standardization of pawn and purchase hold periods. It standardizes the hold periods for pawn stores across the state. Also modifies the distance restriction of pawn stores near casinos from 10 miles down to 1,500 feet. With that, I can stand for any questions, and also have Mr. Cassidy here if members have any more technical questions.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I'm just a little concerned because I'm wondering if we're limiting somewhat the power of cities. I'm wondering this would be a limit on sort of a retail enterprise. And so I'm wondering what the League of Minnesota Cities would have to say about this.
Would you like to testify? Welcome to the committee. And again, if you could just state your name and who you're with for the tape.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities, and I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today. We do think that we've made some good progress in working out some of our concerns on this legislation, and I'm very appreciative to Representative Sanders and Mr. Cassidy for that. We do maintain that we still have some problems with preempting local units of government in paragraph 7. And that's where there's language dealing with pledged goods that have been taken into custody for legal reasons. And we think we would like to not be preempted on that. So what that would mean is on page 2, line 23, where we've inserted paragraph 7 and 10, we would be fine with keeping paragraph 10 in there, but removing paragraph 7 from that exemption.
Todd Olson with Metro Cities. I know cities have different time frames and have been try to work with their neighbors to get that time frame close to each other so they're consistent with their neighbors, but maybe that's something we could maybe work on with that 60-day redemption period. And also, the new language allowing them to return the pledged goods at any time, I think we are not sure we understand completely what all this does, and to have it preempt both ordinances is concerning.
Sorry. Representative Scalzi, did you have a follow-up question then?
Well, thank you, Ms. Chair. When we say, with the exception of those two paragraphs, nothing in this chapter preempts. So I guess I'm just a little confused, because if paragraph 7 is preempted by language here, then that does change what cities are able to do. And cities are all very different. I think some cities may want to treat pawn shops differently for different reasons. And I would not like to see that the cities lose that right. To me, it's a right for cities to be able to regulate these types of activities, because it does take law enforcement. There's a lot of city involvement with a pawn shop because of the problem of stolen goods. And I know in the city, we spent a great deal of time regulating the pawn shop, because it needed needed oversight by the sheriff. And we were very involved in it, and I would not like to see the city's rights being preempted.
Okay. I'll let you respond in a little bit. It would be okay if we, and maybe at the end, you could respond? Is that okay? Representative Hornstein, do you have a question for these witnesses?
Yeah,
I thought so.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to review, Ms. Finn, if this bill were amended to take out that paragraph 7 language, would it be acceptable to the League of Cities, or you have more concerns beyond that?
Ms. Finn?
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, I think we could live with it without that paragraph 7 exemption. I think there's still a little bit of anxiety about the changes that you see in Section 2 about the location of pawn shops in proximity to gambling casinos. But there, I would just frankly tell you that we don't have a lot of experience with casinos in our communities, and we don't really have a reason to oppose that at this time. It may cause some second looks when it gets enacted, but right now we don't have any reason to oppose that. Otherwise, the other measures in the bill, I think, are reasonable.
Yeah, we'd want. I'm sorry,
oh, Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair, we'd want to make sure there's no with the police working with tracking stolen goods. We'd want to make sure that fits with the new language.
Statute. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. Just one quick follow-up, and Madam Chair, is on that topic then that you raised, Mr. Olson, and I don't know if the author or any of the testifiers could comment. Has law enforcement weighed in either way on this bill?
Mr. Olson, Ms. Finn?
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, I know they're in the room. We've been in communication with the Chiefs of Police Association, and I'm not sure if they want to come down today, but I know we've been talking with them, and they've raised some concerns as well.
Did someone, police, want to come down? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome
I'm David
to the committee.
The Executive Director from the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. And we've had many opportunities to meet with the pawn industry on this bill, and we both moved quite a bit, and this is a compromise that, although there are still some issues with it, our association has agreed to let it move forward. And we do support the issues brought up by the League of Minnesota Cities, as those are the same issues that we've heard as well. But to let you know that we have been at the table and we've worked with them on this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have a bunch of witnesses. Representative Quam was next on my list. Who was your question for, Representative Quam?
It had actually this, Madam Chair, this witness would be good. With the present technology and electronic notification of goods, do we really need 60 days? Don't we get the information to the law enforcement in sufficient time to where we could quickly ascertain if it shows up as stolen goods?
So, Mr. Pita?
Yes, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, sir, we still need the time. Although, with all the electronic assistance that we get through the internet and whatever, it still takes a while for the crime to be reported, for the departments to process the information, and then for the investigation to unfold to the point where the items may be at the pawn shop. So we still do need the 60 days and the 30 days that were agreed to.
Thank you. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While this testifier is here, maybe just a comment. And I missed Mr. Cassidy's open remarks, and I apologize if he's already covered this ground, but being somewhat familiar with a certain pawn chain operation, particularly Pawn America, I think that you would agree that their insistence and their efforts to raise the professional standing of their industry is probably pretty remarkable, particularly in their proactive approach to working with the local law enforcement people. And in every transaction is actually electronically recorded, video recorded, and digitally preserved, and photo ID. They require a photo ID for their transactions, I believe, as well, which really has helped law enforcement members. Because one thing that I know the owner of Pawn America is very concerned about is he does not want to be a fence in any way, shape, or form and raise that credibility. I also know that in the industry, more largely speaking, there's some heartburn because we regulate pawn shops. And having been a city council member, I was involved in regulating a couple pawn shops in our city when my own son bought a pair of Hot Wheels. I mean, actually, Hot Wheels that some kid had taken off his truck, and it was.
I like the kind of Hot Wheels.
No, these were actual Hot Wheels, Mike. So we got involved in doing that, and some of the fly-by-night operators or the one-off operators members were very difficult to work with. They wanted anything but accountability. So I think that we should applaud any effort that the industry is taking to raise the level of professionalism and accountability in cooperation with law enforcement so that they can track stolen goods and so on. But then outside of that, there's all the play-it-again kind of things, and I don't want to disparage that company because that is a company name, but the companies that buy Game Boys or recycle music or videos or commodities like that that are completely unregulated, have no holding time. They can kind of come and go and enter the market as they please, and so on and so forth. And there's a few other companies like that that give me some concern. So I just wanted to make that comment while law enforcement is sitting here, and thank you for working with them to raise that level of accountability and professionalism. I did have a question for Ms. Finn because she was making comments, something about paragraph 10 when she was making her comments, and it was unclear. There was some other distraction going on. Could you restate that, what you said about paragraph 10?
Ms. Finn.
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, I think we're comfortable at this point, relatively comfortable with the language in paragraph 10. And what the amendment that you all just adopted today does is it would preempt local control when it comes to paragraphs 7 and 10. We are comfortable with keeping paragraph 10 in there, but not so much paragraph 7.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for any of the witnesses? Representative Skelzy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then I'm assuming that the police chiefs are also in favor of keeping paragraph 7 not preempted.
Mr. Pitcher?
We support, Madam Chair, We support the League of Minnesota City on that.
Thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the amendment, but my question is about Section 2, the casino pawn shop change, and I don't know if there's anybody who can address that.
Mr. Cassidy?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, could you repeat your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Mr. Cassidy, 10 miles to 1,500 feet seems like a very, very large change, like a 40-fold decrease. Not 40%, but 1/40th of the distance, I think, is what I calculated. Why such a radical change? I got the talking points here, but, 1,500 feet is basically on the complex.
Mr. Cassidy.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, the best answer I can give you, first of all, is that we're not sure where the 10 miles even came from. It was an amendment to a bill in 1996. The best that we can decipher from how that unfolded was that the legislature was trying not to mix vices, quote-unquote vices, there was image issues with the expansion of gambling in 1996. We're in the throes of gambling expansion in the state. And so that's, I think, the genesis of where the 10-mile came from. Now, moving on to the 1,500 feet, where we found that is that there's only one thing we can find in statute where there's that type of restriction, and it's with money exchangers. And so we picked 1,500 feet as the distance as well. We're unaware of any other business that's subject to that kind of restriction. And just to make one other point with regard to this in terms of our competitors, are some of the businesses that Representative Beard just enumerated, and including jewelry stores. Any of those types of retail businesses could set up shop outside of any gambling establishment in the state of Minnesota, and the state doesn't regulate them. They do regulate, through local ordinances, pawn shops and this statute.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cassidy, could you explain this? Why, what does a currency exchange have to do with a pawn shop or a casino?
Mr. Cassidy.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, nothing other than we're trying to find other examples in statute where the legislature has decided to create a distance buffer between a casino and some other type of business or retail establishment. That's the only other thing we could find. So we use that as the example and pick 1,500 feet as the buffer.
What was the buffer in this example? Was that 1,500 feet?
Madam Chair, excuse me.
Well, Madam
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Cassidy, I think that's, I think I do. I think I understand why they put in a 10-mile restriction in 1996. I'm pretty sure we all do. And it seems, I think 1,500 feet is just, exactly. Similarly arbitrary. And it's quite a large change without really any evidence that it's necessary. We might as well just put them in the building. Why make people walk a quarter mile?
Would you like to amend it as such, Representative Winkler?
I'll move it to 20 miles.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, just a point to three examples in the district I represent, which has a racetrack and the largest casino between here and the West Coast, and a whole bunch of pull tab machines. There were three pawn shops. One of them, of course, the Hot Wheels guy is gone because he just would not play nice, and so he's gone. The other two did. One of them is it's across the street from the racetrack, for goodness sakes. You can walk across the street and do whatever you want, and it includes a check cashing, money exchange kind of place with their pawn shop. And then it's less than 3 miles, 2.5 miles from Mystic Lake. And the other one downtown is about 5 miles from Mystic Lake and about 2 miles from the racetrack. And we have noticed, particularly because they are so cooperative with the police, we've noticed no great difficulties with those two establishments. So, again, I'm not sure where the 10 miles came from either, except the only thing I can think of, which has no relation to anything at all, is deputy registrars have to be 10 miles apart. And I don't know where that magic came from, but 10 miles is that number, and maybe that had something to do with this number too. But 1,500, I haven't seen the wings fall off of anything for the two pawn shops that are close to Mystic Lake and Canterbury Park.
Okay, are there any other questions at this time? Representative Hornstein?
Well, thank you. Representative, would you be open to the suggestion that the League says about deleting the paragraph 7, or is that kind of a deal breaker?
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hornstein. You know, it's something we can continue to talk with them on. And again, the purpose of the amendment was to accommodate the cities in the first place. So I think the cities kind of need to get together and figure out what they want. But secondly, the purpose of this bill really is standardization, because there are, you know, for the company that Mr. Cassidy represents, for instance, and it's in your talking points, I mean, you can have literally 60 to 90 day difference in the hold periods just based on the cities. And we know that the technology exists. We've amended the bill for the chiefs of police with the number that they chose to make sure that it was sufficient time for them to make sure that they had the reporting. You know, that was like, you know, 31 days on line 2.14. So we believe that the standardization across the state is important. And so that's kind of the purpose of where we're at. You know, we can continue to talk with them and figure out, you know, where the cities as a collective whole kind of want to go. But the intent of the bill is to make sure that we standardize what pawn shops of all sizes, shapes, and colors, where they can operate and how they can operate.
Thank you, Representative Sanders.
Representative Skelton?
Well, I was, you know, I'm wondering why, where's this bill is moving so they'd be working on. I heard the chiefs of police say that they thought 60 days was what they wanted. So I don't know what, it's either 60 or it's not 60. So there's not any place to work on it. Is it going to another committee that would have some work on it?
It was moved to the motion was to go to the general register.
So unless the author is willing to agree to delete paragraph 7, I guess I can't vote for this because there's no place to work on it. It'll come to the general register and we'll debate it on the House floor, but that would be my impression at this point. So I would like, I guess I would move to delete the paragraph 7 on line 2.23.
Okay, Representative Scalzi has moved to delete paragraph, the reference to paragraph 7 on 2.23. Is that correct? Representative Sanders, would you like to represent Mr. Cassidy? Who wants to talk? Mr. Cassidy.
Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, number one, that reference in that amendment that was put on the bill at the beginning of the hearing was put there at the request of the City of St. Louis Park and the City Attorney of St. Louis Park. We are more than happy to work with the cities going to the floor. We also have, we're going to have these same hearings in the Senate between now and the first week of May, and we'll continue these discussions. As it relates to the law enforcement community, the bill was drafted at 60 days and at 31 days at their request. And just maybe to reset the discussion here, just to explain the real purpose of this bill, number one is the standardization of the hold period statewide. That's the only thing we're affecting in terms of local ordinances. Cities hold all the cards when it comes to pawn shops, whether it's zoning or otherwise, they still have the statute in place. Number two, the existence of the automated pawn system. My client downloads each evening to the law enforcement community every transaction that comes through the door, including anything that's pawned and anything that's purchased. So the law enforcement community knows instantaneously that what we hold is in terms of our inventory and can come look at it at any time. Third is the expense of hold periods. It costs my client a lot of money to store that merchandise. It costs, and those costs are typically just passed on to our customers. So the longer the hold periods, the more expensive it gets.
Sam Winkler?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure everybody's aware, including, I mean, before this amendment, before the A2 amendment was adopted, all of 325J08, so this, all the language that we have in front of us preempted local ordinances. And with this amendment, the A2 amendment, we narrowed it so that only paragraphs 7 and 8 preempt, 7 and 10, I'm sorry, preempt local ordinances. So we By adopting the A2, we considerably narrowed the local preemption of zoning, so we made it much better for cities to have and local control. So I think that was an act of good faith, and I don't think we need to, you know, I guess I'm not sure why the cities suddenly want to narrow that further. And they had time. Otherwise, I guess maybe they were going to testify against the bill in total. I'm not sure, but it seems to me that they have been willing to accommodate and be reasonable, and I trust the bill to continue to do so.
Thank you. Representative Sanders.
Appreciate your articulation, Representative McClure. Thank you.
So I take it you are against the oral amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. We do oppose the oral amendment. For reasons that Representative Winkler just stated, for the reasons that we have been working with the cities, and I guess even from their own testimony, it sounds like they're not quite all sure where their cities are at. So it sounds like they need to talk some more. And again, we're certainly not opposed to continued discussion. I don't think discussion stops once a bill goes to the General Register. So for those reasons, I'd oppose the amendment.
Any more discussion to the oral amendment? Restating the amendment again, then on page 2, line 23, delete 7 and. So it would read, with the exception of section 325J.08, paragraph 10, comma. Any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Amendment does not prevail. At this time, do you have a question, Representative Green?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a clarifying question. You've mentioned a couple times about the standardization of the hold period to 60 days and so on. Could you draw my attention to where that is in the bill and how that language has been changed to be standard?
Mr. Cassidy?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, just to be clear in terms of the types of transactions our client deals with, a pawn shop can pawn an item, meaning they can hold an item while they and lend you money during the hold period, and then you come back and you pay off your loan and you get your merchandise back, whether it's, you know, radio or whatever. In a purchase transaction, you walk in and say, I want to sell this, and just like on the TV show Pawn Stars that you might be familiar with, that type of transaction where you just go in and sell your merchandise, get cash, and leave. On the hold period issue, obviously, the 60 days, cities have right now open-ended authority to go to whatever. The highest we're aware of in the state is 120 days, and the lowest, is I think, is 21. On purchases, it's the same thing. The same rule applies. They can set whatever they want for that. And we're asking...
I'm sorry, 60 and up.
60 and up, exactly. And we're just asking that that number just be set at 60 for a pawn transaction in this section 10, paragraph 10, which references back to paragraph 7, the 60 days, and that for purchases, that those transactions be subject to a 30-day hold period.
Thank you very much.
Representative Beard.
So, Mr. Cassidy, you talked about the automated pawn reporting system. Not that I'm contemplating doing business, but you never know. So if I walk in and either sell something or buy something, it's uploaded every night to the local jurisdiction. Does that just include the transaction, or does that include my name and face and address and everything else?
Mr. Cassidy?
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, it includes everything. Identifying information about yourself, a lot of personal information. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, photo ID information, and a description of the pawned or purchased merchandise. And so everyone understands that.
Thank you for the heads up. That's all I wanted to know about that.
Okay, Representative O'Driscoll.
Just following up on Representative Beard's comment, if someone were to come in and do a transaction, would there be a hold period before they were paid on something like that so that there could be the download and the check to see if it was stolen or otherwise fenced?
Mr. Cassidy?
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, if I understand you right, they would be paid immediately upon consummating the transaction. The information would be taken at that time, but the download wouldn't. It's not instantaneous, if that's what you're asking. It's typically an overnight download of information to the law enforcement community.
Representative Boudreaux.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cassidy, I guess it's pretty close to what I was looking for, but let me try one more time. If I were to walk in today at 10:55 and want to do a transaction at 11 o'clock after providing you with the information, I could receive a check and leave later that evening. The download would take place, and we'd find out whether it was stolen or otherwise spent materials. There isn't a five-day holding period to allow that to happen to entice me to come back to try to get the check if I am doing some type of an illegal activity. I mean, is that a policy decision by the proprietor, or is that a, there's nothing in statute that addresses that?
Mr. Cassidy.
Madam Chair, Representative Driscoll, not that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Representative Sanders, did you have any closing thoughts here?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess we are certainly open to keeping talks open, but we believe that we have a good bill, that we've been very accommodating so far. We do strongly believe in the standardization of pawn and purchase hold periods. Because of that, we've been amenable to amendments from the cities and law enforcement. So with that, ask for member support and renew my motion to send House File 1152 to the General Register.
Okay. Representative Sanders renews his motion that House File 1152, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay?
No.
Motion does prevail.
Thank you, members.
Last on our agenda today is House File 745. Welcome to the committee, Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Where does your bill go to the General Register?
I believe so.
Representative Murray?
Madam Chair, I would move that House File 745 be approved, passed, and goes to the General Register.
Okay, to your bill, Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Members, House File 745 is a bill that would allow the work to continue of a task force that's been going on for the past 2 years that I've had the pleasure of sitting on alongside Representative Norris Slawick, Senator Senjum, and Senator Bonhoff, along with several of the other members of the autism community. The task force is called the Autism Disorder Legislative Task Force, and the purpose of this task force, members, has been to get a better handle and take a better look at the issues facing families that are dealing with the challenges of autism, as well as the nature of how this is handled between our various departments here at the government level, Department of Education, Department of Health, Department of Human Services, how it's handled through our local school districts, trying to figure out how families are able to access services, how they find out about those services, and make sure that we're doing all that we can to support those families. Members, today, I don't know if you've seen any folks around the building yet today, but today is Autism Advocacy Day at the Capitol, and so you may see some folks coming around. There's a rally going on at the Rotunda over the noon hour, and I do have for sure one, maybe a few more parents who are going to be able to make it over to just do a brief testimony to this bill, but some of them are tied up over at the Capitol. But members, I would encourage your support of this bill. This task force has been one that's met usually about twice a month over the past 2 years. It's been very educational for me, getting to serve alongside parents, pediatricians, psychologists, folks who are dealing with this issue every day with boots on the ground, looking at how it's affecting various communities, the Somali community here in Minnesota, and trying to figure out, as this is a growing epidemic, as we try to figure out what's causing this the growth in this particular disorder, how we can better support and serve the families and children, and the challenges that come along with it. So, members, with that, if there's any questions right off the bat, otherwise I do have a testifier here, Don Steigoff, who has served on the task force along with me.
Okay, Representative Nelson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I see this is an existing task force, but is there, I don't see a fiscal note with this. I guess the question I have, was the money to fund the work of this task force included in the budget the state government finance budget, the funding of LCC. Do you know that, or I guess that kind of the question. Otherwise, this would have a fiscal cost of a task force. Even though it's an existing one, there still is an ongoing cost with it.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson, the task force up to over the past 2 years that was in legislation in 2009 did not have a fiscal note. They worked to make sure that they eliminated any fiscal impact at that point, so there was no cost. That is our intention moving forward. I have been in touch with the departments getting various answers on this. However, our goal at this point is to ensure that there is no fiscal note and continue it pretty much identical to how it's looked over the past 2 years so that there is able to be a continuation of the work and no disruption.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Maxwell, what's the need for legislation? I'm not totally, if this was created through legislation, if there's a sunset or something, I guess we could change that. But why are we putting in statute the membership and all that, those kinds of things?
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Winkler. When the task force was put together in 2009, it was for a two-year period that those members would serve for a two-year period, recognizing that if it was seen as a productive task force, as if progress was made, that it would be reestablished to continue the work. And so at that point, about 6 months ago, the task force members sat down and decided that they would like to reauthor legislation to allow the task force to continue.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And in line with the previous question about the cost, I'm looking at paragraph C, and it says the Department of Education, Employment and Economic Development, Health and Human Services shall provide assistance. So what do they take time, and then that time is not charged to the task force? Or because it looks to me like this would add to their duties, and we know that we're cutting their budget. So I guess I am a little concerned about possible cost that's taking them away from what they normally do.
Representative Mack.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scalzi. That is something that I have been in touch with the departments and have gotten a couple different answers from various ones. For instance, DEED has said that there would not be, both DEED and I think the Department of Education have said that there would be no extra cost, have gone back and forth with Department of Human Services, because they do have folks who in the department who are dedicated towards working on this kind of thing, looking at this type of thing. So I am flexible to working with them if it is something that would continue to be a burden, that if they interpreted that they had to be at these task force meetings twice a month, be willing to work with them on that and maybe take some of that out and create something where they can provide assistance, where they maybe just come to one meeting every couple of months to give feedback to the task force. But again, my goal is to make sure it's not more of a burden on the department and to continue to work with them. At this point, it's just been a little back and forth on how those costs are associated with a couple different answers. But they recognize the goal is to keep it as it has been, not add to their burden, not add to their work, but hopefully create better coordination, better communication between the departments and legislature on this particular issue.
Okay. Maybe at this time we can take your witnesses.
Madam Chair, this is Dawn Steigoff, who is both a parent of a child with autism and has been very involved in this issue and served on the task force.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Steigoff. If you could just please state your name again for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and Representatives. My name is Dawn Steigoff. I would also like to quickly say that the other people to testify are actually speaking at the rally right now. So it did not work out for them to be here. So I am the parent of a 19-year-old son who was diagnosed with autism by age 3. I'm a volunteer for the Autism Society of Minnesota and serve as the chair of the current Autism Task Force. Autism is currently the fastest growing developmental disability in the U.S. The Autism Society of America estimates in 10 years the annual cost will be $200 to $400 billion. Minnesota needs a comprehensive statewide strategic plan to provide a lifespan of services to individuals with ASD. We have to use our resources efficiently and improve the current system. One of the things, as you see, the difference from the last task force to this one is you'll see that we put in there creation of a strategic plan. That's one of the things this task force has learned, is that that has been an issue that has hurt Minnesota when they apply for grants and other things, is because we do not have a state plan developed around autism. And so that was one of our goals of this task force, is to get that developed. Even though we will have recommendations that we will make that will be in our report in January, that could be part of the state plan, but we need to get this plan made. When my son was young, he did not process auditory language, was mostly nonverbal, ran constantly, tried to climb and jump up everything. He only slept 4 to 5 hours, had such sensory issues that he could not tolerate clothes. We used duct tape to keep his diapers on, and he had meltdowns that lasted for hours. I recently received treatment for breast cancer. There was a nurse navigator at one office, a coordinator in another, and our health insurance called and offered me a coach. All I could think of is, I needed this help for my son's autism, not for my cancer. Mm-hmm. There was no one that told us the most success is with 20 or 25 hours a week of intense early intervention. Even when we learned this and pursued services, he waited 18 months on a waiting list to get early intervention services. No one taught us how to communicate with him or how to teach him language. No one came to our house to teach us how to handle his extreme meltdowns and violent behaviors. I learned by taking hours and hours of classes and reading volumes of information. Minnesota has many professionals who are exceptional in their understanding of autism. Yet over 15 years after my son's diagnosis, families still struggle to get their children intensive early intervention. Autism is a lifelong condition. These children are growing into adults. Many will need supports throughout their lifetime. A large percentage of families have a parent who had to give up work to care for their child with autism. Our children will outlive most of us providing that care. Minnesota needs a plan not only for getting the children diagnosed and into early intervention, but for giving them the education and skills to be productive adults, and a plan on how we will care for them as adults when their parents are no longer able. Please support the Please support this bill. And I will say, I think Representative Mack mentioned that it does have bipartisan support by both representatives, both senators that are currently serving on the task force. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Any questions for the witness or Representative Mack? Seeing no other questions, Representative Murray removes his motion that House File 745 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail, and the meeting is adjourned. First time, early.